baseball, Blue Jays, and more baseball. It's the walk-off with Scott Belford and Adam Mack.
This ball is crushed.
The Die Hard Podcast for the casual fan.
And another one. My goodness.
We're not rolling. Yeah, we're rolling.
You caught it. Good for you. I love it. All right. Hello and welcome to the walk-off, everybody. A very happy Bobby Bonilla Day to all who celebrate. Yes.
Was that another million still, bucks?
Another million bucks for Bobby. Look at that.
Beautiful stuff.
He hasn't played since, I think it was 2001. I should have looked it up, but I mean, every single year it blows me away that that man just still collects his $1.1 million from the Mets and is going to continue to do so until 2036, Adam.
That's a lot of time.
It's a lot of time. It's a lot of money. All right. Also, a happy Canada Day to all of you who celebrate. Obviously, it is an afternoon game for the Blue Jays today. Russell Martin is going to be throwing out the opening pitch. All the boys are dressed in their Canada Day Reds. Should be a fun game.
Very cool. Let's just roll it back, though. Bobby Bonilla Day. For anybody who's not familiar, do you want to just explain that story?
Yes. So Bobby Bonilla wound up taking a contract with the New York Mets, and it was deferred over years and years and years for his payments. And so Bobby Bonilla actually retired. Do you want to look that up real quick just so I'm not making up dates here?
But yeah, you bet. Bobby Bonilla, only 13 more years until he's off the payroll, which is insane. Looks like he retired in, what does Baseball Reference say? 2001. He retired.
Yes, it was 2001. I was correct on that. Look at me. That was all off the top of my head. But he sits back and collects $1.1 million every single July 1st. Canada Day is a big deal to him.
He loves Canada Day. He buys so many fireworks all the time.
Yeah, that's right. Firework day for him. Okay, we've got a huge show, so we're going to dive right in here. I did want to really quickly tease that I am going to be in St. John, New Brunswick, July 15 and 16, playing the Punchlines Comedy Club. I bring that up because I know that there are a lot of listeners in New Brunswick, and of course that offer of if you come up to me during a show and mention the walk-off, I will buy you a beer is still out there, so feel free to come and check out some stand-up comedy. We don't really talk comedy too much on here, but it is how Adam and I make our living, so obviously coming out and seeing some jokes would be awesome.
Just to clarify, that deal only applies to comedy nights, not baseball games. If you see us at a baseball game, you're buying your own beer.
You're buying your own beer. I'm not paying for $14 beer night.
And it only counts when we're making money, not when we're spending money. So, okay, we got
all
a lot
right,
to get
you
to.
Can, we do. You can follow us on Twitter at Walk Off Podcast. The Instagram account is The Walk Off Podcast. We've got our Discord link in our show notes. Feel free to join that. We're pushing 200 members now, so get on board. A bunch of rabid Jays fans, and that thing's going constantly. And then, of course, our Patreon, a little tip of the hat, a thank you to all of you. The names are, Adam's got them off by heart at this point, I think.
Oh, man. I really wish I did. I'm opening my notepad right now and I'm stalling and my computer's just chugging along and I'm like, oh, no, we're not going to get to it in time. But I do have it up in time, especially with that nice little stall method that I did there. So the names are David, Abraham, Michael, Sarah, John, Simon, Rashid, Jeremy, Ian, and Dunedin Bob. Thanks for all your support on Patreon. What do we got? We got movie reviews. We've got behind the scenes, early access content. Today on the Behind the Scenes show, Scott and I were just kind of discussing some of the upcoming guests that we're working on getting on the show. So some cool stuff there. Early access
and then
interviews.
We've also added series previews.
Well, have at her then. I thought the Patreon was my turn to talk, but Scott's supposed to step on my toes today. So he's.
Well, I was just. I watched your Tampa Bay Rays series preview, God. And I was gonna give you some credit. I don't know. I thought it was good.
All right. It was a rough
okay.
one.
Okay. All right, we're gonna just get right into this here. Number one, thank you so much for all the interaction and all of the likes and subscribes and all of that good stuff. So we do appreciate the walk-off community. Big show today. The Jays head-to-head with some division rivals. This eight-game stretch here at home was definitely worrisome. But boy, oh boy, they took 2 of 3 against Boston, won game one. I give this five-game series against the Rays yesterday, so they are 3-1 in the first 4 of these 8 games. We'll dive into that. Alek Manoah continues his dominance of this sophomore season he's having, so we'll talk his numbers and how special what he's doing actually is. The schedule softens after these final 4 games against the Rays, so we'll talk that and look into what the schedule looks like as we approach the All-Star break. We check in with some friends of the show. Samad Taylor and Spencer Horowitz having themselves some pretty tidy little seasons, so we'll talk them and their numbers and where they could go in the near future. The All-Star vote leaders were revealed yesterday, so we'll talk the finalists and the fan voting. Charlie Montoyo. So we have a talk about Charlie probably 3 times a year and figure it's time to kind of check in and do a temperature check with you and see what we all think of Charlie, Papa Charlie's job so far this year. Personally, I'm more positive than other times we've talked about him, so we'll get into it. And then we'll talk the Freddie Freeman Chronicles. Man, just so weird what's happening with Freeman. It's just such a, like... Anyways, we'll get right into it, and then we'll close things up taking a look at the standings as we approach the halfway point of the season. We'll look at division leaders and the wild card races. All right, let's talk Blue Jays and this 8-game homestand against the Red Sox and the Rays. The Blue Jays, despite a very disappointing loss in the 10th inning of that final game of the Red Sox series, still took the series 2 out of 3, and they looked pretty darn good doing it. Out of curiosity, Adam, when you watched that series, do you fear the Boston Red Sox?
Okay, to be honest, I fear the Yankees and not much else. The Yankees are the only team that I, AL anyways, haven't been following the NL too much, to be completely frank. In the AL, the Yankees are the only team that I do worry can beat us on our best days. I think they need to bring their
A
game as well. But I think if we're playing our best and the Red Sox are playing their best, we're going to win a 3-game series quite handily. We're a better team. I'm not scared of the Red Sox.
I like hearing that. I need to agree with you, especially with the fact that there is a little bit of a Achilles heel with this Red Sox team when it comes to the back end of their bullpen, especially with Tanner Houck being such a free thinker and refusing to do what he has
thinker.
To do to come to Canada, right? So, and I know Boston Red Sox fans lost their mind on Twitter about this. How could we be screwed so hard? Of course, this has been a topic of conversation with Jays fans since the beginning of the season, because one of the things that the Blue Jays management had to do this year was make sure that all of their players were vaccinated so that they could play in Canada and then cross the border into the U.S., both countries having the same rules, which is something the American fan base doesn't like to talk about, that it is an even playing field. But it really happened out, or it really turned out to be an advantage for the Blue Jays, right? Them not being able to go to Tanner Houck in that 9th inning, especially game 2 there, wound up costing them the game, I would say. So,
yeah, I mean, it's you can't argue that. For anybody that's not familiar, Tanner Houck is unvaccinated, and Canada has the... We don't care if you're an athlete or not. If you come to Canada, you have to be vaccinated. Love it or hate the rule, it is the rule. And,
it's the rule.
And we're seeing quite a few teams come into Toronto less than 100% of their manpower just due to that fact. And Tanner Houck is the closer for the Boston Red Sox and played a pretty pivotal role in the Red Sox losing that second game there where the Jays came back. I don't think they got a single out in the ninth inning.
You know who does bring their whole team to Toronto when they come?
Toronto.
The New York Yankees.
The New York Yankees. Okay, so...
like, they're scary for a lot of reasons, but yes, carry on that thought.
My brother and I were talking back and forth. He thinks it's the dumbest thing ever for an athlete to be unvaccinated, and I'm not going to really argue with him, but I did see the quote from Alex Cora after the game, and he said, you know, basically things will be different come September, right? Like, it's not going to be an issue. And that's fair.
He's probably right. He's probably right. I know we're watching restrictions at airports in Canada lift. We're watching, you know,
that's your thoughts on it. My thoughts were that come playoff time, he's gonna fucking tell Tanner Houck, like, get your fucking vaccine done, buddy.
Oh,
like, it's not up to you anymore. That was my interpretation. My interpretation was, we're not... look, it cost us a game, clearly. Like, that's a blown save on Tanner Houck, as far as I'm concerned and a lot of people are concerned. That was my interpretation of that, was it's not going to be an issue come September because we're going to have a heart-to-heart and we're going to basically force someone's hand, and it's either, you know, get vaccinated or we're going to trade you or something, right? But, like, that was my interpretation
of
it.
Wow. See, because when I heard that, my interpretation was that they were like, oh, yeah, the governments are going to change these rules. But that's even far more interesting.
I have a lot less faith in the government doing anything than I do in a
Cora.
Than I do in a billionaire forcing a millionaire to do something.
Yes.
So with under my interpretation here, let's just play that out. If you're going to get vaccinated for the playoffs in September, why not just get fucking vaccinated now?
It's true.
Like, that for me, that's where, like, if I was a Red Sox fan, and I mean, God bless, I'm not, but it would be so frustrating to be like, if you're never going to do it, that's one thing. But if you're going to do it eventually, just fucking do it now. You know, like, I
don't know. It's a good point. Listen, and to all of you right now who are just cringing, being like, oh, they're talking politics. Like, this really affects the baseball outcomes, just so all of you are aware. So it's not
Look,
so much
the
Adam
Blue,
and I talking about how we feel about vaccination
the,
status.
The Blue Jays missed the playoffs last year by one game. The Red Sox could miss the playoffs this year by one game. You know what else could happen? They could not have home field advantage in the first round by one game. Like, there are a lot of scenarios in which that one game has a real impact on the Boston Red Sox come October 1st, or like whatever date you want to put on that. It's wild that that's even a factor, but it's hard to deny.
Fair or not, and irrelevant of how you feel about this rule, it's the rule. It's what they need to play by, and it is affecting certain teams a lot more than others. Like I brought up earlier, right? The Yankees bring their whole team to Toronto.
And a lot. My understanding is a lot of those players weren't vaccinated at the start of the season.
They didn't wish
they
to.
They had a locker room talk And you know, maybe that's part of the reason they're on 120 win pace, is like, that is a group of guys who is like
team first,
man.
And
we're here to win.
I hate them. Like, I don't want to give credit to the Yankees, but credit to the Yankees.
Yeah. I mean, they're the Yankees for a reason. Fuck the Yankees. All right.
So 2-3 against the Red Sox. They go into this 5-game series yesterday against the Tampa Bay Rays with arguably the biggest question mark in this Toronto Blue Jays starting rotation. And I don't even think arguably really needs to be said there. Yusei Kikuchi was absolutely dominant.
As he always is.
Listen, he went six strong innings. He had eight strikeouts, one walk, allowed one run, and did it without looking lucky, did it without looking like there were some close calls. He had his slider moving in and out of the zone. He had his fastball hitting 98. The guy was throwing his changeup 21% of the time, which is not something you normally see Yusei Kikuchi do. He was, which played up his fastball. The guy made some adjustments, and buddy, it paid off.
It was interesting to see Gabriel Moreno back there. Just to see, like, I know Jansen wasn't an option. And Kirk was probably just exhausted from being Alejandro Kirk.
Yeah, from
carrying this team on his back. What's that say about, like, the call? I don't even know if it's a, I guess he was just back there by default. But to have a pitcher who was struggling like he was, and to put the rookie out there to manage the game and to call the game, like, I don't know. That's pretty impressive. Gabriel Moreno continues to impress me.
I mean, the Blue Jays play. So me too. Gabriel Moreno has been incredible. And it's a great point that they went with such a young.
Scott, I'm losing.
They are in a pitching crunch. Are you? Sorry. Yeah.
I don't know what's going on. Are you at a hotel or something?
No, I'm at my mom's house.
Your mom needs better internet.
Am I back?
Yeah, you're back.
Yeah, well,
join the Patreon. Support us. $4 a month. Let's get Scott's mom better internet. Let's go. All right.
Yeah, me and Jason Kenny's mom need better internet. So all I was getting at is that we are in a pitching crunch currently. They're playing four games in the next 3 days. And boy, oh boy, did they ever need a big game out of Kikuchi. And he showed up. I mean, it doesn't instill any more confidence in him to me. And I don't know if you can speak on that. If after last night's game, you're like, okay, Kikuchi's found it. I don't feel that way. But it was a definite big game for him.
No, Kikuchi's like the weather in Texas, man. Like, changes every 15 minutes. Like, I was down in Texas for a couple weeks years ago, and that was the first time I'd ever heard the expression, if you don't like the weather, wait 15 minutes. And that's how I feel about Yusei Kikuchi. Like, he's just going to be elite and then useless. Like, he's... Mm-hmm. When he's on, and that's great. It's unreliable, but it sure timed out well this week because, what did he go, six full innings?
Yeah.
Needed that. Needed
really
that.
Really needed that. I mean, this roller coaster that is Yusei Kikuchi is far from over, right? We've got him under contract for 2.5 more years. And I saw something recently that was comparing. So here it is here. So there are 9 starters that signed in free agency between the 10 and 16 million a year average salary. This is this off season. So the best pitcher out of these guys that have been signed
sure.
for around that 10 to 16 million dollar range, John Gray is number one. And I know okay. ERA is not the greatest stat for pitching, but this is what we're going to go with for this particular example. So John Gray got a 4-year, $56 million contract from the Texas Rangers. He's 4-3, and he has a 3.89 ERA. This is the best pitcher in that price range that okay. was signed at the deadline. Eduardo Rodriguez, so E-Rod, he signed a 5-year, $77 million contract with the Detroit Tigers. His line is 1-3, and his ERA is 4.38. Now, E-Rod has been injured on and off, so I think we can expect that contract to look a little bit better than it does right now. Like, we're falling down the ranks pretty quick here. Zach Greinke is the next most valuable guy. He signed a 1-year, $13 million contract, and his ERA is 4.68. Alex Wood with the San Francisco Giants signed a 2-year, $25 million contract, and his ERA is 5.05. And then Yusei Kikuchi is 3 years, $36 million, and 5.08 is his ERA. And that doesn't include yesterday's game. So he's probably even a little bit better this time.
Oh, yeah, I think his ERA is around 4.7 now, last I checked this morning.
And then it goes even worse. Alex Cobb, 2 years, $20 million, 5.48 ERA, and then we get into the 6 ERA realm, and that's Steven Matz at 4 years, $44 million. James Paxton at 1 year, $10 million. And then...
So what you're saying is it's not as bad as it feels. It could be worse. Is that what you're telling me?
What I'm saying is this contract sucks, but... That's what happens when you go into the free agent market for these mid-range pitchers. They always wind up getting more than they're worth because there isn't a ton of guys out there. And that's the thing. That list of dudes there, the John Grays, the E-Rods of the world, they're very similar to Yusei Kikuchi, where they will dominate for a game. And then the next game, you're like, what the fuck happened? Right?
I need to clip that. yeah. Man, it's I don't know the right. I don't even know what to say about Yusei Kikuchi other than like his time is almost up for one, right? I spent yesterday shopping for boom arms and socks to stick on my microphone here, just so I could get that ASMR channel going on the side here. I heard those are pretty lucrative. Join me as we fall asleep and I have to call the microphone and for everybody listening. Okay, anyways, but I was listening to a couple Sportsnet podcasts, At the Letters, Blair and Barker, and the feeling was unanimous between Dan Shulman, Blair, Barker, everybody. Yusei Kikuchi is on his last legs here. Like, it's either... shape up or ship out. It is figure it out, or we're going to have a what they called a phantom IL stint, which I mean, you know, neck soreness is the excuse, right? It's a reason to send him down to AAA
and let him work it out.
Yeah, it's maddening. It really is.
Especially after watching yesterday's game. Like, I was blown away. Like, it was one of those games where, again, I felt... After three innings, I was watching the game with my uncle here in Kelowna, and he said, give it time, he's going to blow it. And I said straight up, no, he's not. He is dialed in.
Yeah, like, sometimes he just has it, and that's the frustrating thing. Is like, why don't you just do that all the time? I grew up playing baseball. One of the best pitchers on my team was a young man named Adam Ems. And shout out to Adam Ems. And he struggled with control at times. So we never knew if we were getting like the shutdown, untouchable Adam Ems, or if we were getting the Adam Ems who was going to go out and bean four players in a row. Like, literally, it was that. He just either had it or he didn't. I don't know if it was the breakfast he had or what, but I do feel like that with Kikuchi, where it's like he's dialed in and I have confidence in him, or it's like this is going to be a long day. And by long day, I mean a very short day for Yusei Kikuchi.
Okay, let's take a hard right.
Before we do that, this is just a comment that came in on our YouTube the other day. So Barry Fox commented, this is a long comment, we'll save the rest of it for mailbag, but his suggestion was give him five games at 100 pitches and reevaluate. Basically, you can't lose twice in one game was his theory, right? So like, send him out there. If it's
if it's a tire fire,
like, you know, you lose the game 14-1. It is what it is. But if you pull him after midway through the second and you deplete your bullpen, you know, that does have implications on tomorrow's game as well. So
great comment.
I kind of like that strategy myself. I mean, it sucks to just punt on a game in the second inning. but also, like, I don't know. I do want to see that kind of a strategy going into, like, the doubleheader on Saturday of, like, I think it's Gossman in the morning game, and then it's a bullpen by committee in the second game.
And then our boy Ross to close things out on Sunday, yeah.
So Gossman's going head-to-head with Shane McClanahan on Saturday. Shane McClanahan, probably the front runner for the AL Cy Young. Would you agree?
I would say so.
I feel like Gossman needs to give us 100 pitches no matter how he's performing. Like, I feel like we just need 6-plus innings out of him. We can't just afford to throw that game away if he comes out of the gates slowly. Like, it just puts us in such a hole for the second game of that doubleheader. Like, I'd rather split on Saturday than try and throw good money after bad and end up losing both games because we depleted our bullpen trying to save a game that we were already out 5-0 in the first inning. Do you know what I'm saying?
I do. I'm feeling good about Gossman. After that game against the Red Sox, that was a big-time game by a big-time player. I mean, they needed innings, and he came in and pitched a gem.
We'll see
how it plays out, but I agree with you.
I think, I don't know, how. Okay, generally speaking, we gave Gossman a lot of money this offseason. How are you feeling about him? Because he's, you know, Yusei Kikuchi, roller coaster. Kevin Gossman has been known to give up some duds as well, like... The highs are higher than Yusei Kikuchi, and the lows aren't quite as low, but there's still some lows. How do you feel about Kevin Gossman?
I'm fine with Kevin Gossman. You're fine with, okay. I think I really don't have any concerns about him, even if he continues to do what he's doing, which is just pitching slightly over a 3 ERA and giving up a dud, one in every 4 or 5 starts. It is what it is. It's what you're going to see out of most number twos. Speaking of number twos, let's take that hard right now and get into Alek Manoah, because the guy is having a gem of a sophomore season. We just talked about McClanahan and the fact that he's the front runner currently for the Cy Young. Well, guess what? His competition is probably Manoah. And if you, Adam, have to take a look at this starting rotation, do you think it's safe to say, would you proclaim Alek Manoah our pseudo ace? Is he the guy you have most confidence in when it comes to our starting rotation?
100% yes. He is our opening day starter in 2023.
He's the guy you go with in a wild card game one.
He's the guy I would throw out there for 3 games in a row. Not quite. But yes, Alek Manoah.
The sample size is big enough now
that, yeah, like he is awesome. That's great analytics from me, very eloquently put, but he's a phenomenal young pitcher, and I hope he stays healthy.
Well, you are known for your eloquence, and you have done it again, keeping that up. I think the most impressive thing to me this year about Alek Manoah is the fact that the organization has shown how much they need somebody to eat some extra innings, that there has been some bumps in this bullpen, especially more recently as we hit June. Well, I mean, July 1st now, right? We're almost at the halfway point of the season. His strikeouts are down this year, but he is pitching more innings because of it. And it just feels like such a selfless move to watch his Ks go down and maybe his numbers suffer just a little bit to concentrate on putting the ball in play and getting deeper into games. And you got to love to see that out of a 24-year-old kid.
You do got to love to see it. Numbers are down. So strikeouts per 9 last year, 10.2 strikeouts per 9 innings pitched. This year, 8.1. But he's also shaved his walks in half from 3.2 to 1.8. So not quite in half, but a significant drop there. So we'll take that trade any day of the week. His whip last year, very impressive, 1.048. So that's walks and hits per inning pitched. This year it's under 1. So
love to see it, especially for a starter, man. Love to see it. And I know this last game, and you can jump right back in here, yep. but this last game, I just want to talk as two-seamer for a second here, because his two-seam fastball in his last outing, without a doubt, was the best that I personally have ever seen it. The run on that pitch is scary. To watch it go from an inside pitch to a right-handed hitter and then dart back in and catch that inside corner, or to watch a left-handed hitter watch it look like it's coming in the strike zone and then dart outside, incredibly impressive. Even though he took an L in this last game against the Red Sox, of course the Jays wound up giving up the lead and losing in extra innings, but he pitched a heck of a game, and that two-seam fastball, buddy, wow. I'll let you jump back in with numbers, but man, the run on that pitch, like, it's just, how do you hit? He's hitting 98 now too. Like, you're watching his fastball hit 98, and with the movement and the spin on that thing, disgusting. Like, just gross. How do you hit it?
Good question. Here's a how do ya for you. How do ya manage his innings down the stretch? Because last year he pitched a career high 111 innings. This year he's already at 94. We're not even at the All-Star break.
He's at 94.
He's two complete games away from matching or beating his all-time career high in innings pitched in a season. So,
Mr. Mack, what an interesting little wrinkle that I had not really thought of. And this is just off the top of my head, but I know that they incrementally don't like to increase a starting pitcher's work more than about 30 to 40% a year. So if you're going to look at 110 innings, 30%, let's just round it up to 35. Sure. So you're right around, let's go 40.
Let's go 150 for a total.
150 innings pitched. I have heard nothing from this front office about limiting his pitch count throughout the season. However, you do need to think that maybe that is a concern. I wonder what you do, or if you just take the reins off and let the big man pitch. I don't even know how to answer that, dude, but that's a really good little wrinkle that I had not thought of.
I mean, look, we need right now, we need him pitching deep into ball games. There's no lie there. He needs to help give our bullpen a day off, right? Mm-hmm. If he can go out there and then we can have Simber be the setup man and Romano close, or Meza go out to close, or whatever the combination is, right? And we don't have to burn through four relievers.
Charlie has been letting him go deeper into games as well. I know that he hit 110 pitches, I think it was, last time out, 107 the time before. So he's getting his pitch count up over 100 every time he's out right now. Charlie's letting them go deep into games.
So that's what we need right now. But what we really need from him is to be healthy and hitting his stride in October.
You're nailing the nail on the head. I mean, you're hammering it there. I was watching the game he was pitching in, and some stats came up that really kind of put in perspective what this young man is doing. So the lowest Blue Jays ERAs after a minimum of 15 starts are as followed. Number one, Alek Manoah with a 2.01 ERA. Roger Clemens in 97 with a 2.05 ERA. Roy Halladay in 2005 with a 2.41 ERA. And Dave Steeb in 1985 with a 2.48 ERA. We're talking Toronto Blue Jays greats.
Yeah.
We're talking Hall of Famers in that list. And Alek Manoah leads the way. Incredible.
Very impressive stuff from the young man. Wish him all the health and happiness through 2022 and beyond, because we're going to need it. Maybe that's just one more reason to go out and get some bullpen arms, so we can let Manoah go
You bringing up his innings last year, like, totally changes my view on this upcoming trade deadline and how important a starting pitcher is. Because I had almost kind of gotten to the point where I'm fine with two or three bullpen arms over a starting pitcher. But after hearing that, maybe they do need a guy who can just, not even a stud, just someone who can come in and pitch some innings for this team. so that we can maybe give Manoah, let him pitch every 6 days for the last few months of the season. Who knows? They're going to need to figure out this inning thing some way, unless they have decided with their sports medicine scientists and their however you want to put it, right? Their organization has all sorts of experts that are far above Adam's and my pay grade when it comes to deciding stuff like this. Unless they have decided that safety-wise, it's fine. They don't need to worry about his arm blowing out, giving him the extra innings. But you never see pitchers double their innings. And right now, Manoah's on track for about 210 innings this year. And I can't see them allowing that to happen.
It would be a pretty big jump in innings pitched, that's for sure. All right, let's... I don't mean to...
We'll move on.
Yeah.
No, we'll move on. We'll move on. So let's get to what the schedule looks like once they finish these final four games with the Rays, which is a much softer schedule heading
into
the All-Star.
Can we just press the pause button on that and remind anybody who's tuning in right now, today, despite being Friday, is an early game.
So yes.
If you're tuning in at 7 o'clock Eastern, expecting to see first pitch, you're going to be watching Jays in 30 on the replay because game goes at 3 o'clock today.
So shut this off and turn the Jays game on and then finish the episode after.
Exactly. Let us play in the background. Canada Day festivities, I assume, have a role in the scheduling?
I would say so. A lot of days off for folks. You know, this is a stat for a lot of people. So, for all Canadians.
Traffic downtown Toronto is going to be very congested, I would imagine. Russell Martin throwing out the first pitch. 3 o'clock Eastern. Tune in. Anybody on the West Coast, enjoy that afternoon game and then head out to the beach and enjoy some fireworks. So it'll be a good time. All right. Let's move on from there.
Schedule. What are we looking at going into the All-Star break?
I'm glad you brought this up.
Because it softens. Yes.
So schedule. We've got four more against Tampa. The one today, this afternoon, doubleheader tomorrow, and then a Sunday afternoon game as well with Ross Stripling on the mound. But beyond that, we've got the Oakland A's for 3. We've got the Seattle Mariners for 4. That's a nice little West Coast trip. Anybody out in BC, Alberta, that is a great game, great series of games to go down to. It is mostly Blue Jays fans, so you'll feel right at home. In Seattle.
I'm actually going to be at that Seattle series. So
nice. Very good, sir. Very good. First ever baseball game that I ever went to was a Blue Jays game in Seattle. And
it's a cool environment.
It's a cool environment. Oh, big time, buddy. Beyond that, we have 2 against the Phillies, who had been playing hot but are now missing Bryce Harper. I don't know what to say about Bryce Harper. He's long been one of my most hated baseball players in baseball.
Me too. I don't like his face.
He's the motivation for me making last year's all face punch team. But I got to say.
Well, he's incredible.
He broke his thumb. Yeah. Blake Snell let one. Sorry. Bryce Harper broke his thumb on a Blake Snell fastball last night or 2 nights ago. Flipped out, obviously in a lot of pain. I like the way he handled it. Mm-hmm. I gotta say, he went up a notch in my books.
Really?
He was, yeah.
I thought he handled it well too, actually.
I watched the Jean Boy breakdown of him flipping out, screaming, cussing out Blake Snell. And then, like, even in the heat of the battle, you know, he realizes his season's probably over. Still had it within him to be like a pretty decent dude about it and like let Blake Snell off the hook and be like, I know you didn't do that intentionally. He's like,
yeah,
I'm fucking upset right now. I it's all good. We're good, buddy. And I thought that was pretty cool. So Bryce Harper, credit where credit's due. I thought handled himself like a pretty decent dude. So I don't know. I've been coming around on Bryce Harper, Scott, and I really hate to say that, but Maybe it's because he shaved off all of his long hair. He's a heck of a ball player. I don't know what it is. He's winning me over. He's like a young Kevin Biggio.
Okay, so after the Phillies, how does that...
Then we got four more against the Royals going into the All-Star game. So it is Oakland for three, Seattle for four, Phillies for two, and then four against the Royals. That is a very juicy 13-game schedule heading into the All-Star break, and that'll...
And it's very lucky for the Blue Jays organization, who is in a bit of a crunch when it comes to pitching. We've already touched on that a few times today. Bullpen especially, they need a couple arms. They definitely need a starter. They're looking for a lefty bat. All of these prices are high currently in the trade market. They are going to go back down to normal and be much more reasonable to pick up some of these areas of needs. Players that will bolster this roster a lot closer to the trade deadline, which is August 2nd this year. So if they can get through this last four games with the Rays and take two of the last four, which means they will have won 5 of 8 against their division rivals, and then they're going into this soft schedule, it gives the front office some leeway to not need to overpay or jump on the market earlier. Listen, it's going to be a competitive market, and it's going to be an expensive market anyways, especially with the expanded playoffs and how many teams feel that they need, especially bullpen bolstering. So you're going to see these prices high anyways, and if you can make sure that you can wait it out those last 2 weeks to make sure it's only high and not astronomical, I think that's the way to play this. And this schedule coming up gives the Blue Jays a little bit of leeway.
Yes, the schedule coming up couldn't have been timed better. You summed it up perfectly, buddy. Like, this is just exactly what this Blue Jays team needed. We do have real needs. We are going to have to pay real prices to solve those needs. But yeah, this is... if this was an ugly schedule, like, we might have to make some tough decisions and hit that panic button.
Exactly.
Right?
Yeah.
But yeah, like you said, we got four more games that we really need to be focused on. And then beyond that, I'm not saying take your foot off the gas, right? Because
no,
that's definitely not what you want to do. But I mean, yeah.
Listen, the Kansas City Royals are not the Rays.
They're not. They are not.
It's just that simple.
It's just that simple. Yeah, going into the All-Star break, heading into the trade deadline with potentially, let's just say, 10-3 in that last 13-game stretch, right? That is that puts this team in a much different position than if we had, say, the Boston Red Sox schedule coming up, because that is a team who... 10-3 versus 3-10 heading into the All-Star break, that makes your needs feel a lot more urgent than they maybe are in all reality. Like, we need a starting pitcher. We need bullpen support. We need, maybe we don't need a lefty bat.
Yes.
We need pitching support. For sure we do. But when you're riding a winning streak, or when you're winning most of your games,
the urgency isn't quite there.
And the urgency isn't quite there.
That's a good dealing from, right? So, like, that's a
yes
way to approach trades.
So let's look at the Tampa Bay Rays schedule and the Boston Red Sox schedule as well, just as a comparison. We're not going to look at the Yankees because the Yankees are just out of reach at this point. But the Red Sox, the Rays, and if we really look at, honestly, it's like a four-horse race for three wildcard spots, in my opinion. Maybe you get a little bit further than that. I'm not sure. So here's the wildcard standings right now. Blue Jays and Red Sox, Cleveland Guardians, Tampa Bay Rays. Beyond that, we have the Rangers are 3.5 games back. The Angels 4.5 games back. The Mariners 4.5 games back. The White Sox falling further and further behind. The Orioles beyond that. I don't think the Orioles are going to make a push this year.
No,
they're very close, but I don't think this is their year where they see, okay, let's try and get into the playoffs. Blue Jays, Red Sox, Guardians, Rays. That's four teams vying for three wild card spots.
Turns out the Guardians are good.
Jose Ramirez leading the charge there. Look, we're going to compete. It's going to be a lot of bidders for basically all the same pieces, right? We're going to want a starting pitcher. Mm-hmm. Guess what? The Red Sox also are going to want to add to their pitching depth. Same with the Rays. Okay, so here's
same with the Yankees.
Same with the Yankees. I know they're not going to let us just catch up to them, right? So here's the Tampa Bay Rays schedule. Tampa Bay Rays have three against Boston, three against the Reds, four against Boston, and three against Baltimore. Those three against the Reds, those are three very winnable games. Baltimore is no slouch. They are turning it around.
Love seeing the Red Sox and the Rays play each other because that just means if the Jays are taking care of business, they're gaining on either of them.
Yeah, so as long as, as long as we're going 9-4, as long as we're going 10-3, 11-2, I don't want to get too far ahead of ourselves here, but the Rays and the Red Sox playing seven times against each other, I mean, I don't know what's the better case scenario, that those two go 4-3 against each other and we just kind of make up four games on each of them, or that one team goes 6-1 or 7-0 and kind of keeps pace with us and the other team just falls out of it.
What? I don't know. I think I'd rather see them split.
Yeah, I think so too. Here's the Red Sox schedule, okay? So they have three in Wrigley against the Cubs. Beyond that, it's three against the Rays, four against the Yankees, four against the Rays, three against the Yankees.
Oh, what that a sweet is a, schedule.
Oh, buddy, is that...
This is us in April. Yes.
This is us in April, exactly. That is a four-game... That is a gauntlet for the Boston Red Sox. A Boston Red Sox team. Like, that is... when
this
I saw that on the schedule...
Ending. Yeah.
Yeah, it could be catastrophic, right? Like, I'm going to be... I hate even saying this sentence. The Yankees could win seven of those games against the Red Sox and really do the Blue Jays a favor. Like, I hate saying this. I'm going to be cheering for the Yankees in those games.
Oh.
Right? Like, we're not going to catch the Yankees. So whether the Yankees win 115 games or 130 games doesn't matter to us. Go Yankees.
Couldn't agree more. Let's shift to a prospect check here.
Okay.
And look in on a couple of friends of the show. Spencer Horowitz was very generous with his time and sat down with us. This was about 3-4 months ago, just before the season started.
Yep.
And so Spencer Horowitz was a little bit older. He was 24, playing in high A last year, and wound up breaking the record for consecutive hits in the Pacific Coast League? High A League.
Yeah, in Vancouver.
Out in Vancouver. He was promoted to Double A, and buddy, he is killing it. So Horowitz in his last 21 games is hitting .400. He's got a .517 on base percentage, a .729 slugging with 13 extra base hits, 18 walks, 15 strikeouts, walking more than he's K-ing. He's got an OPS of 1235 and is looking like he very well could get the call up to AAA very soon. Now, when we sat down with Spencer, one of the things that we talked about was that whenever you're a first baseman, now this is a lefty, by the way. He's a natural lefty too. He swings left, he catches right. Right? He throws left, I guess, yeah, is what I'm saying. So a natural lefty, which is why he was kind of pigeonholed at first base, because baseball old school folks really feel that if you're a natural lefty like that, first base is one of the sole positions that they'd like you playing. But we talked with him about how if you're a first baseman in the Toronto Blue Jays organization, that there's a bit of a matzo ball waiting for you. Blocking your way, if you will, with Vladimir Guerrero Jr. as the first baseman with this team. So one of the concentrations, or one of the things that Spencer was really focusing on in the offseason, was a little bit of positional versatility. He's been playing more left field, and I think that is an actual place where he could truly help the Blue Jays. Listen, he's 24 going on 25 in Double-A. He is skewing a little bit older than some of the guys he's playing against. However, I just gave you his numbers. The fact that he is a lefty and the fact that he's bloomed a little late does give you hope that this is a guy who can truly contribute on this big league team. Maybe not this year, but in 2023, I don't think it's out of this world for a guy like Spencer Horwitz to make that jump. Again, positional versatility is going to be what does it for this dude, but he's sure making it a tough argument not to at least promote him to AAA.
Yeah, I was reading an article on MLB.com, MLB.com/news/trade-deadline best candidate for each team. Spencer Horwitz was the candidate for the Toronto Blue Jays.
Really?
For all the points you just brought up, that log jam at first base, he's playing well.
Yeah, he is. So this article was saying that he might be called up, or no, it was saying he's a trade piece.
He's a trade piece. So this was just a list of each team, all 30 guys, you know, looks at the Cubs, Wilson Contreras, looks at whatever, right? And that was the number one most likely to be moved by the Toronto Blue Jays at this trade deadline.
Very interesting. Well, no, it does make sense. Again, with him being blocked at first base, unless he can find some positional versatility, it's a good point. It doesn't matter how good he's hitting. He's never Vladimir Guerrero Jr. Let's move on to Samad Taylor. He's a guy who sat down with us right before spring training and right before they settled the strike. He has, I wouldn't say dominated AAA, but he has been just a solid AAA player. He's 25 years old. He plays shortstop. He plays second base. He plays third. He's been getting some time in the outfield. What is his numbers looking like currently, Adam? And I'm curious about stolen bases, too.
Samad Taylor in AAA Buffalo this year has a batting average of .260, OPS .769, so good, not great numbers. 28 walks to 60 strikeouts, not the best. Stolen bases, 23.
Mm-hmm.
9 home runs, 45 RBIs.
The kid's got power.
He's a plus defender.
A speed.
Yeah, plus defender. Speed.
And if you look at his career numbers through A, double A, and triple A, those are his number. And there is something to be said for consistency when you make that jump year after year and still putting up the same numbers. I'm not saying that 260 equates to 260 batting average triple A to the bigs, but there is a significant jump from high A to double A. There's a significant jump from double A to triple A. It's the reason that they've got these divides amongst developing players, and he has never missed a beat. So if you look at Samad Taylor as a guy who can take those numbers he's putting up in AAA and bring those to the big leagues, that's a very valuable player to this organization, especially with the fact that he plays so many positions.
Well, positional versatility is important. We've seen it with Gavin Biggio. We've seen it with Santiago Espinal. Here's one thing. I was listening to Blair and Barker yesterday. They were talking to Dan Shulman about trade options at the deadline, right? The name that they threw out is a potential trade piece. You're going to hate this. Santiago Espinal.
Fair.
He's young. He's cheap. I don't think he goes in the division, but he is the kind of guy that a team like a Baltimore Orioles could say, Santiago Espinal, that could be our shortstop for the next 4 or 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like,
and they do have infielders within their system that are moving up the ranks. You've got Jordan Groshans. You've got Samad Taylor. You've got Leo Jimenez. You've got a lot of guys that are kind of clogging up that middle of the infield who could potentially make the jump next year. That's really interesting. I hadn't thought of Espinal.
Here's the reason for Espinal was when you talk about a Teoscar Hernandez, when you talk about a Lourdes Gurriel, these guys are old. These guys are out of service time or very close to, right? Like, if you are the Chicago Cubs, if you are a team like this, you don't want a 29-year-old who's going to be a free agent in 1 year or 2 years. And Espinal is a guy that...
27 with 3 years of control.
Right? So, I don't know. I mean, if we're talking about making a real splash in that trade market, and we don't want to take, you know, we don't want to have to totally deplete the farm system.
And there are a lot of teams out there who are looking for a big league player, and Espinal fits that checklist.
Yeah.
I mean, certainly does. And it's a great point. Like, obviously, if they are going to trade from within the roster, really the only options are Lourdes, Teo, and Espinal. I mean, unless you're going to trade a catcher, which I don't think they are until the offseason. That's a really interesting little wrinkle to think about. Moving on from Santiago.
We talk trading catchers all the time. Danny Jansen has the least trade value because of his age. Mm-hmm. Right? Like, other than to a contender. Right? But then a contender isn't giving us a piece that we can use this year anyways. That's the same argument with Biggio versus Espinal.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Biggio is rapidly approaching his free agency. Right? He was called up. Of those kids, he was the first one up.
Mm-hmm.
So as much as we'd all rather have Espinal play second base than Kevin Biggio, that's probably the piece that you can trade to get something useful in return. So...
well put. Let's talk Charlie for a second here. How are you feeling about our manager? How are you feeling about Charlie Montoyo these days?
I mean, look, the team's not... we're what, 10 games over 500? Mm-hmm. 11? 10? Hard to complain about your manager when your team has a winning record.
I like what he has done, in all honesty. I have been impressed with him the last couple of months. I really think that the way he shows respect and support for his team is very admirable. He has those guys' backs, and they seem to know it. Even this little... I know Guillermo Martinez is currently serving a 5-game suspension after that little fiasco in Chicago where he went out and obviously reamed out Doug Edding and the umpiring crew. That was a move that... I don't give two shits how many times Montoyo says, oh yeah, that was Guillermo, completely on him. Just a no, that absolutely, that wasn't planned. Give me a break. That was a that was a premeditated plan, and I loved it. And I have no doubt Charlie was the brain child. That was Charlie's brainchild, right? That idea to go out. And I mean, it just was set up too beautifully, and I just like how much he has pushed back against bad umpiring. I like how much he has shown confidence in a lot of these guys. Even, do you know how easy it would be to have just crapped on Yusei Kikuchi? Like, it would have been so easy. Even, you could have even spun it as a motivational tool, right? I'm pushing the guys. You see managers do it all the time, but he never did that. And I mean, Yusei Kikuchi is far from out of the woods. We spent a lot of time already talking about him, so we don't need to double back on that. But I just really like the approach that Montoyo has taken. I think that we've watched him grow as the manager since he took the reins of this team. And I don't think that there's a better manager out there currently that would do a better job at this moment in time. That's where I'm at on Charlie. We don't need to spend a ton of time on this, but I just was kind of curious on your thoughts.
Yeah, Charlie Montoyo is an interesting... Look, he's still a first-round exit away from losing his job, I think.
That's probably true.
Like, if this team wins 97 games but gets swept by the Red Sox in the first round...
Wild card. Yeah.
I don't think Charlie Montoyo comes back from that.
If they go to the ALCS and lose, I think Charlie gets another 2 years contract. It's such a fine line between, you know, re-upping and being fired with a team like the Blue Jays currently.
It is. It's too bad the Yankees exist.
It is. But it is what it is. And it's going to be so sweet when they take a division series loss to the Jays and watch the Blue Jays go on to the ALCS. It's going to be so sweet. But I know we're getting long in the teeth here, dude. So let's kind of get to the final couple points here and call her a show.
Yeah, you bet. Let's save Freddie Freeman for long toss. But we should talk all-star ballots.
Okay, let's talk all-star ballots.
So, I guess phase one of the all-star voting is
fan voting
complete, which now moves on to phase two. We'll continue until July 5th.
Finalists have been announced, yes.
Finalists have been announced. Blue Jays lead the way in all of baseball with 7 finalists advancing to phase two.
Stuffing those ballot boxes, baby.
Keep it going. So Alejandro Kirk leads the American League at the catcher position. And rightly so.
And he's running away with it.
Yeah. At first base, we've got Vladimir Guerrero Jr. and Ty France. Ty France is now outlined with a flexor strain, so Vladdy should settle in there nicely at first base at the All-Star game. Second base, Jose Altuve and Santiago Espinal. Does this surprise you?
I mean, I don't think Santiago Espinal is a top two second baseman in the American League currently. That said, no, it doesn't surprise me that the Blue Jays fans have gotten out there and voted him into that top two spot. I think it's great.
Now, it's still fan voting at this point, right?
Yes, sir.
But now the options are limited to between Altuve and Espinal.
Yes.
Do you think there's enough residual hatred for the trash can Astros that Altuve gets the bump? Like, do you think there's enough people who are going, I'm not voting for Altuve. I've never heard of this other guy, but I'm voting for him anyways.
Personally, I think there's far more bitterness towards Blue Jays fans for getting so many of these players into this finals. And I think that there's going to be a little bit of a pushback on some of these. And I think a guy like Espinal is going to be one that suffers the consequences of all this Blue Jays love.
Fair enough. Well, the shortstop position, we've got Bo Bichette leading the
votes. Leading the way, right? Yeah.
And Tim Anderson in second there, with the Chicago White Sox. How do you feel about this one?
I love it. Tim Anderson's more deserving, but it's a fan vote. Who gives a shit?
So Tim Anderson, I do think, will end up winning out. But like, I don't know. I think they both deserve to.
Bo's an all-star. Bo will probably be there.
Then in the outfield, Blue Jays have two outfielders. So last year, Teoscar went to the All-Star game. Lourdes Gurriel Jr., fifth in All-Star votes. That's wild to me.
This is like when Lourdes wins gold gloves. It's just like, did he deserve that? What just happened?
Yeah. Do you think there's there's no chance Lourdes Gurriel Jr. goes to the All-Star game, right?
No, he shouldn't.
So he's up against Aaron Judge, who automatic starter for leading, I think, all of baseball in votes. But then we got Mike Trout, George Springer, Giancarlo Stanton, and Gurriel. So Yankees fans will make sure that Stanton goes to the game. Mm-hmm. Mike Trout has to be there.
Yeah.
Like, Major League Baseball will rig it to make sure he's there. George Springer should go. Yeah. I don't know. Okay.
No, you're right.
First bit. Oh no, that's it. That's it for the.
And that's it. Yeah, there's no voting for pitching. Yeah. So good job, Blue Jays fans. Definitely putting the boys in blue on the map here.
Love to see it. Pitchers are voted in by the players, correct?
Yes, players and the management.
Manager and stuff. Sure. Okay, well, I think it'll be cool to see Alek Manoah throwing baseballs to Alejandro Kirk at the All-Star game.
Couldn't agree more. What a battery. Love that combo. All right, let's wrap things up here with a quick look at the standings around the league. We are approaching the halfway point of the season, so I thought it would be a good idea just to check NL, AL, division leaders, what the wild card races are looking like, and then we will bid all of you adieu. Thank you again so much for all of you who have paid attention and watched right till this point. Go Blue Jays, go. Let's start with the American League.
American League East, as the New York Yankees running away with it. They are 12 and a half games up on the Jays and Red Sox. 727 win percentage, just absurd. AL Central, Minnesota Twins are one game up on the Cleveland Guardians. And in the AL West, Houston Astros are running away with that division as well. 11 and a half games up on the Texas Rangers. So Houston's going to make the playoffs there. The rest of that division
Man,
is done.
Did you see the AL West being this bad? Because they have definitely... I really thought Seattle and the Angels were for real. I really thought the Rangers would be more in this. And to just watch the fact that Houston is just running away with it.
Well, I mean, when the Mariners went out and signed Robbie Ray, you know, and they had... Jared Kelenic made his debut last year, and Julio Rodriguez got called up to start the season. So you're thinking, okay, this is a young team, like, on the rise, right? This is the next Blue Jays, potentially.
Exactly.
And then the Texas Rangers went out, spent all that money.
Half right? a signed, billion, if you want to put a number to it.
Signed Seager, signed Semien. Spent a lot of money. And then the Angels are, you know, have two of the most dynamic, phenomenal athletes to ever play sports. Right?
Yeah.
Between the Astros, the Rangers, the Angels, and the Mariners, I thought there'd be a little bit more competition in that AL West. I am surprised by that. AL Central is a big surprise to me, too. Mostly,
I did not expect the White Sox to fall out of it like this.
I didn't see the White Sox falling out of it. I didn't see the Guardians competing, and I didn't see the... Like, I thought, okay, we just talked about the Mariners and the Rangers signing in the offseason. I was shocked when the Twins went out and they signed...
Got Carlos Correa.
I was like, what is this bad team doing signing Carlos Correa? Right? Like, that would be like if the Cincinnati Reds went out and signed Aaron Judge next year. Mm-hmm. Right? It'd be like, why is this bad team spending
After
all this money
Luis
on a great
Castillo,
player? Yeah.
They trade Luis Castillo at the trade deadline and then go out and sign Aaron Judge. I mean, we're talking a little bit more of an extreme scenario, but like, really?
Yeah, there's
the
an exaggeration
last year,
there.
Like,
So, I mean, I'm surprised by the Twins. I'm surprised by the Guardians. I'm surprised by the White Sox. But the White Sox have had a lot of injuries they've been dealing with, to be fair. Mm-hmm. That being said, yeah, the AL has been a big surprise to me. The Yankees have been a big surprise to me. Like, I thought they'd be good. I thought they'd be right there with us and the Rays.
Couldn't agree more. Wild card is Blue Jays, Red Sox tied, correct?
And yes, then Blue Jays, Red Sox are tied, and then the Guardians and Rays are also tied 2.5 games back for that final wild card spot. So there are, I mean, the Guardians could not get a wild card spot, but could win the division, I guess is how it could still work, right?
Yeah, they really could. Which is how it's shaping up. It's looking like it very well could be three AL East teams taking those wild card spots. Let's take a quick look at the NL and call this a show here.
Okay.
Who's leading divisions in the National League?
We got the New York Mets leading the NL East. Bounce back season from last year, which is good to see for them. The Atlanta Braves playing well this year. Right behind them, 3.5 games back. In the NL Central, we got the Milwaukee Brewers are one game up on the St. Louis Cardinals. That's going to be a dogfight right till the bitter end, I think.
Right till the end.
Los Angeles Dodgers are 2.5 games up on the San Diego Padres. And San Francisco Giants are in contention in the NL West as well, just 6.5 back on the NL
West.
What's
the wild card look like there?
Wild card looks like Padres, Braves, and Cardinals have the three wild card spots in the NL, and the Giants are one game back of the NL wild card. Phillies, 2.5 games back, have been feisty as of late, but now without Bryce Harper, that is a big blow to the Phillies.
Yeah, he was definitely the front runner for the NL MVP. So tough loss there on the Phils.
Very tough. Okay, that's everything for today, man.
Awesome. Thanks everybody who has paid attention right to the end. We appreciate the patronage. We appreciate the community. You can feel free to join our Discord for free. That is a link in the show notes at Walk Off Podcast on Twitter, The Walk Off Podcast on Instagram. We will see you all Sunday for Long Toss. Take care, everybody. Go Blue Jays, go.
Thanks for listening to the Walk Off Podcast with Scott Belford and Adam Mack, with a new episode every Friday.
Oh! Osborne with a drive. Cheese and cracker shows to pitch to him. Long move.
Thanks for listening.